Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today we have a great show coming for you. We're going to cover Nainggolan's imminent transfer to Inter. We'll talk about it at the top, and then we'll get a perspective from both someone who covers Inter and our good friend Nima Tavalli, and from someone who covers Roma, and our great friend John Solano, a complete regular on the show. So Alex and I will talk a little bit about it, but I think you'll find it interesting to see what someone who covers Inter and Roma has to say. So, and we'll also answer your great Twitter questions, and we'll end the show with a very interesting interview with Matt Lichtenstatter, who covers MLS on Di Marzio's site. This is an interview that I think will interest even people who know nothing about MLS, but that will be at the end. Before we get to all that, though, I'm joined by our great friend, producer, co-host of the show, a maker of fantastic videos, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, I want to ask you this question. Inter's definitely off to a great start in the transfer window. We've talked about on the podcast the fact that they've signed De Vrij and Asamoah on free transfers. Those deals aren't completely official, but they're done. They brought in this excellent prospect from South America, Lautaro Martinez, and they almost certainly are going to add Nainggolan. So let me ask you, you've become a Serie A expert. You saw last season Roma, Napoli, and Juve. How much do you think Inter has bridged the gap so far in the summer?
Huge. I think they've bridged the gap big time. I think they're almost right there now with Roma and Napoli. Juve is still its own entity, but they're getting close already. Look at the summer they're having. Compare it last year to the other Milan, how Milan was pretty quick in acquiring a bunch of players. But I like what Inter's doing more because, David, almost all the players they've acquired or about to acquire are already from Serie A. Look at Stefan De Vrij. He's already a proven center back for Lazio within Serie A. They know they're getting a good center back there, and also just 26 years old. Look at Kwadwo Asamoah. Not a star by any means, but a serviceable, solid player who's played a long time now on Juventus, the best team in Serie A. So a player that's not going to have to adapt. Look at Nainggolan. Obviously, a player coming from Serie A, coming from Roma. Didn't have the greatest year last year, but had an exceptional year too. 2 years before. So three proven Serie A players. And then on top of it, I love if you're bringing in three players you probably know you can count on, then you bring in the youth player. Of course, he's from South America, Lautaro Martinez, a really promising player. So you're bringing in three people who are kind of known entities, and then one wild card that really could pay off dividends. And also, I think it's very strong when you bring in people down the middle of the pitch. You got Stefan De Vrij, center back. You got Nainggolan, a CM. And then you got Lautaro Martinez, a striker. So that's always really solid. If nothing else, always try to shore up the middle of the pitch. So I love what Inter is doing, and I think they really are closing the gap with Roma and Napoli. Of course, there's more cohesion right now within Roma and Napoli because they've all played together, but I think the fact that they're bringing in proven Serie A players is huge. So I really like what they're doing. David, what's your take?
Yeah, I can tell why your videos are so popular. Really, really good analysis. So I echo a lot of what you're saying. I'm going to take it a step further. Not only are these established Serie A players, in a way they are weakening the teams that they're competing with. You know, a lot of people would say Nainggolan's definitely one of Roma's best players. De Vrij was certainly Lazio's best center back. And look, last season, Inter barely edged out Lazio for that Champions League spot. Last season with Alessandro having definitely a down season, I don't think it's a stretch to say that Asamoah was Juve's best wing back last season. He fits a clear need for Inter. So I think, you know, you have to be very happy if you're an Inter fan. Now, you know, if you want to be a little bit more pessimistic, Nainggolan isn't what he was 2 years ago, but there certainly is the potential with Spalletti, the manager that has gotten the most out of him, that he gets something out of him. Now, the other question is Nainggolan next season going to be better than what Rafinha could have offered? It doesn't look likely that Inter would be able. It seems these players are mutually exclusive. DeVry, if you wanted to nitpick, improves a position where they're already really strong. But again, you need good depth, especially with Inter back in the Champions League. So look, I'm trying to be a little bit more pessimistic because I am known for being overly optimistic about Inter and usually Lazio as well this time of year. But you definitely have to applaud what they've done so far. And the next thing we want to applaud are our great listeners who send us great questions using the CalcioLand hashtag. We're going to try our best to record 3 episodes a week. We want to give the people what they want. So if there's a question that you have for us, we cover Serie A, transfers from all leagues, movies, TV, music, journalism. Fire away using the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, well, let's stay on the subject of the Ninja. This is a very interesting question, David. With Roma building their team with young players, did it make more sense to move Nainggolan, who has potential to be a bad example?
This is an interesting angle. I'm not sure how much it's like, oh, you know, we have Cristante, Coric coming in. We already had some nice, good young players. We have Kluivert here. We can't have this chain-smoking, crazy tattooed guy around. I don't think it's that much, but maybe that is a small factor. I think in general, Roma's trying to be more in Monchi's image, and this is what he does, you know, discover young players and groom them. As part of the deal for Nainggolan, Roma's probably going to get 2 of Inter's best prospects. I wouldn't underrate that part. I see everyone tweeting, oh, Inter's getting Nainggolan just for $22 million, but they're also getting 2 highly rated prospects. Let's see how it breaks down, but that's what it looks like now. So I think it's just Roma wants to kind of move forward. I think they were definitely interested in moving either Nainggolan or Strootman this summer, especially once they had signed Cristante. So I don't think the character is much of an issue. I just think it's more the age and making the team younger.
All right, let's stay on Inter. David, any chance Inter are able to retain either João Cancelo or Rafinha?
So Cancelo, I definitely don't think so. I mean, they really haven't even been negotiating to keep him. This might excite you, Alex. I saw you tweeted about it. It seemed Inter are more focused on Zappacosta to bring back from Chelsea. I'm not sure this potential swap with Vecino makes much sense for either clubs. We've talked about Vecino on Monday. I just don't know if he really moves the needle for Chelsea. If you could get your money back for what you invested in Zappacosta, that might be better. So I would close the door on Cancelo, who's quite close to Juve. I think there's a very good chance that that deal will happen. I think Nainggolan, for the most part, is mutually exclusive from Rafinha because Barcelona really want to get some money, not another loan for Rafinha, and if Inter is in the team, he probably has a market elsewhere. But, you know, even if Inter are able to keep Cancelo or Rafinha, I think overall when you look at their moves as a whole, they are definitely clearly improved. So are you excited about Zappacosta potentially leaving, Alex? Did that make your day?
Yeah, I kind of did. You know, I certainly welcome him with open arms because I also loved acquiring Antonio Rudiger from Serie A, but Zappacosta's short time with Chelsea, fair to say, it was quite underwhelming. All right, David, let's move on. What do you make of Real Madrid's pursuit of, Sergei Milinkovic-Savic? There it is.
I wouldn't be CalcioLand if we didn't have him. And actually, we do have an update. So we talked about Milinkovic-Savic on Monday. And shortly after the show, Di Marzio posted an update that Real Madrid appear like the most serious suitor for him, and that makes a lot of sense because, A, they can afford him. Lotito, Lazio's president, is going to ask for a ton of money for him. But also, if we go through the process of eliminations of the other teams that have a realistic chance at Milinkovic-Savic, it seems less likely. So Manchester City, Jorginho all but done, so he'll be there. Manchester United, they brought in Fred. We've talked a lot about how Pogba is expected to stay there. At this moment, it doesn't look like they'll invest on another very expensive midfielder, so we can take them out of the equation. I think he's so expensive that for Juve, it was never particularly realistic. I know his father's quotes on potentially going to Juve. We talked about that on Monday. I forgot to mention that what was interesting about that interview is that it was to Tutto Sport, the main newspaper in Turin, Juve's hometown paper. So, you know, maybe he was trying to appeal to the readers there a little bit. So I think it makes a lot of sense. Real Madrid has an older midfield. I think he could be like a big star for them. He has so much versatility that even if there isn't an exact match for him in the midfield, he could play in different roles. And the other factor is, you know, Lazio has a good relationship with Jorge Mendes. I would imagine, although Mendes isn't Milinkovic-Savic's agent, I would imagine he'd be involved as an intermediary in a deal. So as it stands now, I think Real Madrid would make a, if you would have to say who the favorite is at the moment, I think it's fair to say them. But again, it's a long summer and a lot can change. Let's see what happens.
All right. Next Twitter question. Well, let's get some clarification on this one. When will Emre Can officially join Juventus?
So Di Marzio reported on this yesterday. So we're recording this on Wednesday. He's expected to take the medical tomorrow on Thursday. A very good move for Juve on a free transfer. I put that in air quotes. I think Juve fans, you know, also keep in mind his wages are very high. Any player on a free transfer typically has inflated wages. I would imagine the agent fees, which have to be reported on the books, are significant. So calling him a free transfer may be a little bit of a stretch, but definitely much better than spending a big transfer fee on top of those things. So very good move for Juve, I think, on paper. I'm not a huge expert on him, but it seems like he addresses a lot of the weaknesses in Juve's midfield. The other thing is that it looks like there is some momentum for Khedira staying at Juve, so it'll be interesting. Those two guys look so much alike. It almost looks like the sequel to Borat, so I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, that is going to be interesting. They're almost identical twins, just vastly different in age. But David, let's stay on Juve. What are the odds Pjanic leaves the old lady?
So there's been a lot of talk on this, and Di Marzio, there's been links to Barcelona, potentially PSG, but Juve are determined to keep Pjanic, I think, especially now that Milinkovic-Savic seems even more of a dream for them. But you guys know the rule with Juve. If a player wants to leave, they won't stand in the way. But I don't get the vibe that Pjanic is that eager to go. Juve will probably give him a new contract and make him one of the highest paid players on the team. The highest two are Higuain and Dybala at $7 million after taxes. I want to stress after taxes. In the UK, they're reported before. I could see Pjanic being more in the $6 million range. So my guess is that he stays at Juve.
All right. This one's pretty topical. Was quite the big news last night. David, any truth to Juventus or Milan pursuing Jack Wilshere?
Yeah, so yesterday Arsenal announced that he won't be extending his contract. And look, both Juve and Milan have been linked to him in the past. The Milan situation is so up in the air that it's really hard to say, although a player on a free transfer is easier for them to sign than someone with a transfer fee, but that seems like a big long shot to me, especially with them potentially being excluded from European competitions. Juve had been linked to them. We know how great they are at signing starting caliber midfielders on free transfers. I mean, Emre Can's just the latest of a long list, but I would say at this time, I think it's a pretty long shot. Wouldn't shock me if he signs with another Premier League team. Would you want him at Chelsea? I mean, where do you see him as a good fit in the Premier League?
Yeah, I can't have him at Chelsea. You can't depend on Jack Wilshere at this point. He's just so injury prone. I like the talent, but I would not. If I was AC Milan, no way would I go near Jack Wilshere because they need stability. And Jack Wilshere almost is the opposite of stability. Nice talent, but at this point, I would not hold my breath for it to come full circle. So that's my opinion on it. David, next Twitter question. Thibaut Courtois isn't known for being a sweeper type keeper. How much of a problem would that be if Sarri comes on board?
I would say fairly significant in the sense that, look, Sarri loved Pipirina not just because of his leadership, but mainly because of his ability with his feet. You know, when Sarri was at Napoli, you know, they were linked to Pirin, but he really wasn't a fit in the system. So I think it's somewhat significant. Now, the other thing is Sarri historically isn't a manager that's involved, that is very involved with transfer moves. The thing with Courtois, we don't even know if he's going to stay at Chelsea, if they're going to be able to extend his contract. I think Alisson would have been the dream keeper for Sarri, but it looks pretty close that he'll go to Real Madrid. So I think that could be a factor. I'm nowhere near as familiar as Courtois as you are, Alex. How would you rate his ability with his feet? Do you think there's potential of him getting better if Sarri goes there?
Potentially. I mean, he's pretty good in terms of kicking the ball with both feet, but he is such a tall and almost awkward, lanky guy that I just don't think of him in terms of a sweeper type keeper. I mean, he's far from Emmanuel Neuer in that department, but many are. But he's still a very talented keeper, so maybe Sarri just values his talent and that wins out. But no, he's not that classic sweeper type keeper that I think of at all. So it'll be interesting to see. I would have loved Alisson on Chelsea with Sarri. So, David, let's stay on keepers. Who will be Napoli's next keeper?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of movement on this. Interestingly, pretty much almost all the keepers linked to Napoli have previously worked with Ancelotti, have a connection to him. So we talked about Peter Cech on Monday. That seems like a long stretch. I think he's a total backup for Napoli if everything else fails, probably more of a loan deal. The other keepers that they've been linked to, their top choice is PSG keeper Areola, and we know that PSG ideally would like to keep him so Buffon can groom him for a year or two, but he does have an expiring contract in 2019. Mino Raiola, who has a pretty good relationship with Napoli, is trying to work as an intermediary to see if they can lower the price of around $35 million. I think that would be their top choice if they could pick anyone. The other names that they're linked to is Udinese prospect Mere. I think that would be, he definitely has the talent. I'd be interested to see how he fits at Napoli, a team that's very ambitious. But one player that actually has worked with Ancelotti in the past that I think would be a great fit for Napoli, and maybe as the window progresses, ends up being on Napoli's radar, is Torino keeper Sirigu, who was with Ancelotti at PSG. I think he'd be a big upgrade on what we saw from Piperina last season. So it's an interesting situation. We need to do a podcast on Napoli. I'm going to try to bring in a guest because we haven't talked a lot about them. The other update on Napoli is Fabian Ruiz, the midfielder from La Liga that our friend Matteo Bonetti is really high on. All but done at the club. He's vacationing in Napoli. It looks like the deal is done, which also means that Jorginho to City is going to happen. So a lot going on with Napoli. So we'll take a deep dive on them next week because there's a lot to talk about there.
All right. Next Twitter question, David. Who do you rate higher between Daniel Rugani and Romagnoli? And could they be Italy's future center back pairing?
So I know some people have asked me a lot about Rugani and Chelsea. And look, I have a reputation for always hyping Serie A players. I think those who listen to the podcast maybe see that on Twitter. I'm more generous than on the podcast. I've never been a big Rugani guy. To me, it's not a coincidence that Juve's defense last season got a lot better when Benatia took over for him. I think hypothetically at Chelsea, if Sarri goes there with him, maybe that would work better because the two of them work together at Empoli. But between the two, I clearly rate Romagnoli better. I thought last season Romagnoli, the best thing that came out of Milan's season was his development. When people ask me about the Italian national team moving forward, the only two younger guys that I have full faith in is Romagnoli and Chiesa. So I'm a huge Romagnoli guy. I wasn't at first. He really convinced me. As far as, they could be the duo for Italy. I know a lot of people talk about Caldara, who left Atalanta to go to Juve. Definitely very talented, impressive player. On paper, I like him better than Rugani, but we need to see how he adapts to a big club. We've seen Romagnoli adapt very well playing for Milan. Rugani, maybe a little bit of a mixed bag. So let's see how Caldara adapts to Juve, but he has the talent to potentially be in that mix as well.
All right, David, last Twitter question. Where would you recommend a Serie A weekend getaway?
It's a good question. And a lot of people ask me about when the Serie A schedules release so they can plan a trip to Italy. And I think that's fantastic. It's just in Serie A, they take their time with this. So, Italy, every region's very different. You're almost in a different world in every region. But the thing that I like about Italy is everything's very close. So if you were to plan a weekend, I was thinking maybe a city that's close to others and that have a team in Serie A, so maybe you can catch two games. And I think a great place to be is Genova, where Sampdoria and Genoa play. Liguria is a beautiful region, right on the water, very underrated part of Italy. So that would kind of be my base, because from there, you're very close to Florence, where you could see Fiorentina. You'd also be very close to Torino, where Juve and Torino play. If you want to go to a Juve game, like you absolutely should go through around Turin. We've had Maurizio on from that outfit. They really do a fantastic job. So I would kind of stick to the north. Most teams are in the north in Serie A, and you could easily catch a game or two in the same weekend if you use Genoa as a base. Like, even Milano isn't that far. So with that out of the way, let's get to the interviews. We're going to go a little bit deeper on Nainggolan with our friends Nima and John, and then we're going to end it with Matt Lichtenstatter. While I have your attention, I want to thank everyone who sends us questions with the CalcioLand hashtag. Thank you so much for the people leaving reviews on iTunes. I can't begin to tell you how much that helps. Please keep leaving us 5-star ratings. If you leave us a comment, we read them all. And also, really important that you subscribe and download our podcast, because that'll help us grow. So thank you so much for the support. Okay, so with the Nainggolan news, and it looks very likely he'll be at Inter next season, there's just a lot to talk about. So today I wanted to get the perspective of someone who covers Inter and someone who covers Roma. We're very lucky to have two great guests that have been on with us multiple times. So to get the Inter perspective, I'm joined by my very good friend Nima Tavalli. Those of you who know him are aware that he's the founder of SempreInter.com, I think the best place to get Inter news in English. So, Nima, it's great to have you back on CalcioLand. How are you doing today?
I'm good. It's great to be on. You know, I love your show.
Awesome. So let me ask you, very simply put, so we have Nainggolan to Inter, all but done. How much do you think he improves Inter in a vacuum? The idea of Nainggolan coming, how excited are you, and how much do you think he ultimately improves the team?
Well, that's just it. I mean, I tweeted out, as I'm sure you saw, I got a little bit of stick for it, because the thing is, with Nainggolan, it depends which Nainggolan we're getting. Are we getting the Nainggolan that we saw, before last season, all those years before that? Then I'm super excited. Then we get one of the best midfielders in the world, in my opinion. However, there is this risk, I think, because we're talking about a guy who's pushing 30. He's had a so-and-so season. Okay, Di Francesco's tactics didn't suit him that well, but he's a smoker. He likes to party. He's over, he's 30 and pushing it. These things kind of matter. And I'm not saying that he will be a flop, but it is kind of a risk, because Spalletti has definitely stuck out his neck for this guy. So it is a bit of a risk. But then again, I am a firm believer that you should always get the coach what he wants, unless that coach is Mazzarri. Then you should do precisely the opposite of what he wants.
Yeah, no, very well said. And I agree completely with what you're saying. I think last season definitely was in Nainggolan's best. You mentioned, and he just turned 30. I think he's an old 30 based on his lifestyle and the way he is. But you hinted at Spalletti, and the way I see it, say there wasn't Spalletti, I wouldn't be nowhere near as excited if I was an Inter fan. Like, say he joined and Pioli was the coach, I'd be like, okay. So tell me how much more faith you have in the move based on the fact that Spalletti is the manager that's gotten the most out of him in the past.
Oh, it's the deal breaker. I mean, without Pioli, or with heaven forbid De Boer or someone like that, it would be an unmitigated disaster, because Nainggolan is a very special character as well. He's got a volatile personality, and Spalletti, his greatest asset, I think, aside from developing players and bringing out the best of them and getting every player to raise one level, is his ability to handle volatile and volatile characters. He gets them all to, he gets them all to move in the same direction, and that's when he gets the best out of his players, and I think that's his strength. So for me, it's a deal breaker. No Spalletti, no Nainggolan.
I love that. So Nima, listen, I really appreciate you coming on quickly for this. We'll have you on for a more formal interview. I have a feeling for your site, you guys are going to be busy, because if Nainggolan comes, him and Brozovic together on Instagram could really be quite entertaining. So I think you guys are going to be really busy. So I'm going to let you get some rest, because you'll be covering a lot of that. So listen, buddy, thanks so much for coming on. I look forward to chatting with you again later on in the summer.
You bet. My pleasure. Have a good show.
Thanks. So we've had John Solano a ton on. He always brings it, does fantastic work. You guys know him as the editor of IS Roma Press. You can also read him on Euro Fantasy Game, where he writes excellent articles. So I wanted to bring John on to give us his take on the Nainggolan deal, which is pretty much all but done for him going to Inter. So I just have two questions for you. I think, you know, Nainggolan's a huge name. Maybe he wasn't the player that he was in years past. I think you and I kind of are on the same page with that. So just cut and dry, how much of a loss do you think the current Nainggolan is to Roma?
I do think that it's a loss. Now, to the extent of how big of a loss it is, I really don't know. We got to see how, obviously, this plays out with him on the pitch. We have a tendency to judge transfers before anyone even steps on the pitch, which I've never been a fan of. But he is coming off his worst season by a pretty far stretch at Roma. This was by far and away his worst season, and it's not even close. I mean, obviously, he was extremely strong under Spalletti, which is certainly the biggest fear that he will rediscover that form that he had in Spalletti's last season at Roma. That is really, if you're an Inter supporter, that's what your hope is. Now, from a Roma standpoint, you really fear that if he returns to that position where he played behind the striker, more of a number 10, whereas this season he played more of that typical mezzala role.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he looked very uncomfortable at times. Now, granted, that was the role he played at Cagliari, but it was pretty obvious that he just did not appear comfortable in that role after he was sensational with Spalletti in that number 10. So I do think it'll be a loss. Obviously, you couple it with who is replacing him and Pastore, who, you know, as far as replacements go, I do think Roma could do worse. But, I mean, if we're just comparing player to player, I undoubtedly think it's a loss, absolutely. And then to couple, you know, to put on top of that he's going to a rival for a Champions League place, certainly that makes it a bit bitter as well.
Yeah. So, John, you hinted at it a little bit, the fear from a Roma perspective, if he goes back to what he was under Spalletti. But Nainggolan is 30. You mentioned coming off his worst season. When you look at his lifestyle, he's probably an old 30. And look, you know, there were offers from him abroad in years past that were probably better. But I think every time people look at that, they don't account for the fact that at least Roma had him for another season. And while he wasn't at his top, he still contributed. So give me overall your assessment on how you feel the return is that Roma are getting. I think it's about 22 million and two prospects. Do you think that's a good return? And how concerned are you that he's going to really help improve Inter, which could then hurt Roma?
Oh, I'm very worried that he will vastly improve them, especially, again, under Spalletti, assuming he puts him in a very similar role to how he was at Roma. I certainly have a fear that he rediscovers that sensational form that he had from the 2016-2017 season. As far as the numbers related to the actual transfer, the thing that frustrates me is Monchi is getting – he seems to be getting slated for not selling him abroad. And I just scratch my head sometimes because anytime it comes to transfers, I mean, players have the majority of the leverage. Club can't force Nainggolan to go to a destination where he has no interest. So, I mean, I see just one of the biggest criticisms of this is, you know, what is Monchi thinking? He's selling to a rival. Well, you know, if Nainggolan has to go, which it looks like it does, he does. I mean, it clearly looks like this isn't we need to make a profit transfer. This clearly looks like this is sort of the straw that broke the camel's back, and now it's time for you to leave sort of transfer. I mean, Roma just can't push him to a club abroad. I mean, obviously, I'm sure Monchi would love that. So as far as the actual, you know, the figures of the operation, I mean, the cash portion for me is just way, way, way too low, especially when you consider that last summer they probably could have gotten, and I'm sure you can attest to this probably a little better than I can, but they probably could have gotten 40 million euros for him last summer.
Oh, yeah, at least, yeah.
Now, granted, you alluded to the fact they had him for an extra season, which obviously that matters. His contract, he amortizes for another year from a financial point of view. So that, I mean, that matters too. But the cash for me is really, really puzzling. And then when you figure that into the fact that the entire transfer, the valuation of him is $35 million. I just don't know how these youngsters that are going to be involved in the operation, how they're valued so high. Now, obviously, I'm sure Roma and Inter, they're doing some very interesting financial footwork from an accounting standpoint to make this work, especially considering Inter need to make the financial fair play work before the 30th of June. I can only imagine how artistic this is going to look in their in their books, but it's just I don't understand how Roma would agree to such a high valuation on these youngsters who look like are going to be involved in the deal.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you made a great point. Like, look, I don't think Nainggolan accept this transfer to anywhere else but going to play for Spalletti. So I think people whining of him not going abroad kind of missed that part. So I totally agree. So real fast before I let you go, I'm just going to ask you this. On a scale of 1 to 10, how likely do you think is Alisson to Real Madrid?
Oh, I've maintained he would leave the entire time. So I'll say an 8. No reason to change.
Yeah, I'm with you. And you still think Real Madrid of all teams. I mean, that seems
undoubtedly. Yeah, awesome. Another thing people overlook is his wife is Spanish. And she's, I mean, obviously being a life partner, very influential in his life. But they go there quite often. They go visit Spain, especially during holiday. I've seen people write that she's Italian. I've seen others write that she's Brazilian. She's Spanish from Spain. They go back there often, undoubtedly. I'm not going to change my opinion. If I could say 99.9%, I would say that, but then I would look like an imbecile. So to look less of an imbecile.
I think it's very, very good. Well, listen, John, as always, we learn a ton having you on. Thanks so much for being a guest. And everyone check out his work on IS Roma Press. I love the podcast. If you want to learn more about Roma's Mercato, that's the place to be. So, John, thanks so much. I look forward to chatting with you very soon.
Awesome. Thanks again. Love doing this. Thanks, David.
And for the final interview of today's podcast, so the headliner of the show, we have someone who does a fantastic job covering MLS on the Marzio site. He's been writing a lot of excellent articles on the league for the past few years. So I'm thrilled to be joined for the second time on Calcioland, my good friend Matt Lichtenstatter, very good writer who's trying to break into broadcasting. Matt is a free agent. He's looking for a job. So those of you who run sites, I can't recommend Matt enough. And through the interview, you'll realize why. So Matt, it's a real pleasure to have you.
I didn't expect to get a resume boost today. That's cool.
There you go. So thanks so much for joining us. This is your second time on the show. It's a pleasure to have you on. How are you today?
I'm all right. I'm trying to wake up after watching Uruguay, but we'll get there.
All right. Sounds good. So, Matt, I wanted to ask you, we've already had some MLS players shine in the World Cup. I think a lot of people, especially in the Mexico-Germany match, but those aren't the only ones. So tell our listeners, because most of them aren't that familiar with MLS, which players from the league have stood out in the World Cup, and if there's more that you expect could make an impact before the tournament ends?
You definitely saw Carlos Vela play very, very well against Germany. He was really, really impressive. And Juan Carlos Osorio, people don't know, he used to coach at MLS before coaching Mexico, which is interesting to watch an MLS coach have this kind of success at the World Cup. Not many Mexican fans were happy with Juan Carlos Osorio. Some of the players you also saw, if you watch the CONCACAF teams, you're going to see a lot more MLS players. You saw for Panama, you saw Michael Murillo, Fidel Escobar, Roman Torres. Those are three MLS defenders. They played very, very well. Aníbal Godoy plays for San Jose. They were a very defensive team, but they were very resolute. They lost 3-0, but I don't think that was any shame on Panama. Almost all of their players have played in MLS at some point. Blas Perez once did. Armando Cooper, Gabriel Gomez all did. They've had a lot of MLS players come through Panama, and that's made that nation better. Costa Rica, they've had a couple of MLS players as well. Interesting to see how they've coped, of course. Costa Rica, you had Francisco Calvo, David Guzman, Johan Venegas once played in MLS, Marco Urania plays for LAFC, Yoshi Otun, big part of what Peru is trying to do at the World Cup. He's a DP for Orlando City. I really like the way he's played. He's made Orlando City a lot better. Not as many MLS players, obviously, because the U.S. isn't involved, but for the players that have played, they've played pretty decently. And I think that's a good account of the league, especially when you see how resolute Panama was, when you see that Costa Rica was pretty resolute as they always are. It's good to see that when you look at MLS players, not too many otherwise, but I think most of them that you saw, they put in a good account of themselves.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. So one MLS player that is in Russia, but not to play, more for, you know, marketing opportunities, is Zlatan Ibrahimovic. And, you know, while on one hand I'm thrilled that a player of his caliber is coming to the U.S. and, you know, they brought him at a very low salary, didn't really impact the ability to sign someone else, I always felt like for those that don't know much about MLS, they see that signing and they're like, here we go again, the retirement league. So I'm glad we started by pointing out the performance of actual MLS players in Russia doing well. So now that I got that rant out of the way, give me your take on Zlatan on the Galaxy so far, how his performances have been, and if you think, you know, the way he impacts the perception of the league is important or significant in your opinion.
I think it's with Zlatan, it's different. I think he falls more way a Messi, Ronaldo superstar kind of camp, as opposed to the Ashley Coles, the Gerrards, the Lampards of the world, even to a lesser extent Wayne Rooney, because Zlatan Ibrahimovic is somebody who everyone knows about. He has a larger than life personality. You've seen him on ESPN talking head shows, which is a rarity for a lot of MLS players. So when Zlatan Ibrahimovic is there, he becomes somebody people want to see. You know, you could say a lot about Wayne Rooney or all these other players that have come to MLS and gone who are well past their prime, but Zlatan Ibrahimovic is still Zlatan. He was still scoring for Manchester United. Now, he's scored 7 goals already. If you didn't see his debut against LAFC in that just bonkers game when he came on, I think, late, I mean, that was Zlatan. It was peak Zlatan. And, I mean, they've sold out games in Chicago and Houston. Those two teams don't have the best attendance. And that's because Zlatan's playing, and people want to watch him play. And to have Zlatan in your league means people are interested. And there are certain players where you can't turn down the opportunity to sign them, even if they're past their prime, which I don't think Zlatan ever will be past his prime. He could play until he's 50 if he probably wanted to and get away with it because he's Zlatan. So if you're looking at that, he is not a retirement league perception. And that's one of those just extenuating circumstances, I guess, where if you could sign Zlatan, you're obviously going to do it. But most of the players that MLS teams are spending a lot of money on are young designated players, young players. So you don't see as many of the Wayne Rooney types, and Wayne Rooney is very heavily rumored to go to DC United. You're not seeing as many of those as you have in the past. And even though Zlatan is older, I mean, he scored 7 goals. That's right now 5th in the league. That's, again, it's Zlatan. He's more like David Villa than he is Frank Lampard or Steven Gerrard.
Yeah, I actually think that's a very good comparison. And look, you know, as much as I think, like, sometimes with people that don't follow the league at all, it hurts the perception, I'm planning on going to see him play with the New England Revolution when he comes here, and I've never been at a game, at a Revolution game. So your point is proof.
He plays on turf. That's
yeah, that's actually a really good...
But he has played on turf before, so I think that you might get lucky there, because Henri never played on turf.
Yeah, that's actually a really...
Some people came in, they didn't want to play on turf, but we'll see if Zlatan does. But again, just the idea of him playing is going to get more people to go to that game.
That's for sure. That's for sure. So let's talk about an MLS figure who actually is going the opposite route, and this is Patrick Vieira, who has left New York City FC to go coach Nice in France. I'm nowhere near close to an MLS expert as you are, but I have covered NYCFC because of Pirlo, been to a few games. I have to say I noticed a massive difference when Vieira was the coach compared to his predecessor. So tell me, how would you describe Patrick Vieira's coaching style, and do you think it will translate well to Europe? Because I think eventually he'll be at a big club. I think Nice is just going to be a stepping stone. So if you had to describe him to someone that's never seen a Vieira coach team, how would you do it?
If you've watched Manchester City play, it's kind of what you're going to get with Vieira. Very much City football group, possession-oriented, going to beat you with the ball, very creative, very incisive. There sometimes could be a little bit naive tactically. If you've watched any games against the Red Bulls, and the Red Bulls press Vieira's teams, and the Red Bulls have been winning a lot of those games, that's where you could see that. But it's very much like Manchester City, to a lesser extent, obviously. It's not Pep Guardiola with De Bruyne and Leroy Sané, players like that. But it's very similar, and it was very, very successful. Vieira is one of the best coaches in the league. I think overall, since Vieira took over, they had one of the best records in Major League Soccer, just in terms of regular season. his teams played very good soccer. They played passing soccer. They played creative soccer. And I remember writing that I didn't really like the Vieira signing. I didn't think that it was going to make a lot of sense. I thought, uh-oh, Manchester City 2 is coming. But Vieira proved that he's has his tactical ideas, he has his ideas, and he implemented them well, and he got his players to buy in, and New York City were playing some really, really good soccer. They had their moments where they didn't play particularly well, but Vieira is going to be successful. Within 5 years, he's managing somewhere in England that's big. I don't know if it's Manchester City, maybe it's Arsenal, maybe it's somebody else, but he's going to be managing in England within 5 years, or in a big club within 5 years. He's that good. And Nice is a stepping stone, obviously, but the fact that he came in and succeeded in MLS is a good sign that the league can now not only take young players and develop them, but perhaps young managers and develop them too.
Absolutely. And how do you think he's going to be remembered in New York, maybe not just for his coaching style? I mean, I definitely got the vibe. I know some people around the club, they were always so impressed with him. I imagine you'd agree he's going to leave a great legacy, correct?
I think he leaves a pretty good legacy in terms of the players that he was talking about. I mean, David Villa, I think, went up after that final game and said thank you for everything, and that's David Villa. I mean, you know, you could see what he meant to a lot of those players. You could see the kind of soccer he got them to play. There were some games in the last couple of years when NYCFC were involved that were some of the best-looking games you've seen in MLS. And MLS games could sometimes be a bit sludgy, be a little bit stodgy tactically. Patrick Vieira's games were not like that, and his team's played some really, really good soccer. He's going to leave a good legacy in terms of just managerial, and he leaves a good legacy at Manchester City, obviously, but also now at New York City FC, proving that they can go in and they have an identity, they know how they want to play, and hopefully he takes that with him to where, now Nice, but hopefully wherever he goes after that, because as I said, I don't think he's going to be at Nice for particularly long if he can do what he did at NYCFC. Although it's going to be odd, he might have more resources at NYCFC than he did at Nice.
Yeah, it's actually an interesting point there. So let me ask you a little bit of Toronto FC. I follow, I watch some games once in a while, but I follow mainly with the articles you post on the Marti site, which are really excellent. Give us a little bit the lay of the land on Toronto FC, because last season they were considered probably the best MLS team ever. How is their season going, and how's Jovinko doing? Do you think he'll ultimately keep being part of Toronto FC moving forward? I haven't followed recently, but I know there seems to be not some issues, but maybe not everyone's completely on the same page with giving him a contract extension. What's going on over there?
Well, the thing with TFC was last year they were the best team in the league by far. They were the best team in MLS history. They had, I think it was 69 points, which is the most in any MLS season. They won MLS Cup, excuse me, and then they played in CONCACAF Champions League, which they went all out to try to win. No MLS team has ever won that tournament. It's a huge effort to do so. They changed the format, so now it's four knockout rounds. It's round of 16, quarterfinals, semifinals, and final, and they tried to win that, and they beat Tigres, very good Mexican club, where Andre Pierre Gignac plays. Then they went Club America, were comprehensively better than both of them at home, did very well on the road to very, very, very difficult places to play against. And then they played against Chivas, had a less than stellar first leg at home, then lost on penalties. They exerted a lot to go into that tournament and try to win it, and they lose on penalties. So they've had a bit of a hangover. They only have 15 points right now, and they just haven't looked themselves. I mean, their last game was a week ago when they drew 4-4 at home to DC United. They were down 3-0, came back. They blew a 3-0 lead in Columbus. They haven't been nearly as good as I think many people want to see. A lot of that is injuries. I think they've had some problems with their center backs haven't been healthy. Michael Bradley's been playing at center back. And again, they've been exerting a lot of energy for CONCACAF Champions League, so they punted a lot of MLS games. So they're not anywhere near where they want to be. Jovinko, of course, he had those four goals in Champions League, only played seven games. He's not quite himself yet. I think that's injuries. I think it could be fatigue from playing all those games early in the season. I mean, he's still Jovinko. He's still very, very good. But Toronto FC are not where they want to be yet. I don't think that there's much to worry about at the moment, because I think that eventually they'll figure it out because they're really good. But just everything that's been going on with those injuries and with CONCACAF Champions League, it's just kind of taking their toll on them. But now they've had about 10 days off. I think they're going to figure out who they are again. And Jovinko's still really, really good. He was the best player in the CONCACAF Champions League and scored, what was it, four goals in eight appearances? He was dominant. He looked like the best player in the continent. And that I've never said that about any MLS player before. And so there's still more for them to do, obviously, but I'm not super concerned about them yet.
Interesting. So let me, to close out, you hinted a little bit about Wayne Rooney. I've heard too. It's almost certainly he'll be at DC United. So tell me a little bit how you rate that move. You've mentioned David Villa. You've mentioned Lampard. You've got Pirlo on the opposite side of the spectrum, someone who didn't work out in MLS. Where do you see him kind of slotting in, from as great as David Villa and Jovinko to maybe not so great like Pirlo?
It's so interesting with Rooney, because he can be very, very good, obviously. You don't do what he did at Manchester United and for England without being a very good player. The problem is, I mean, Villa came to a NYCFC team that spent a lot of money, a lot of resources. Toronto FC, a lot of money, a lot of resources. DC United, not really. The difference with them is they're opening up a new stadium in July. They wanted to make a big splash to kind of get people interested, and Wayne Rooney would do that. Washington's a very transient city, but also a very soccer-friendly city. And DC United's been kind of irrelevant because they don't spend a lot of money, and they've been very mediocre the last couple of years. This was a team that, at the start of the league, was the best team in the league, Bruce Arena. They were absolutely awesome. But recently, they've not been very good. I don't know how he's going to do, because his supporting cast is nothing like Villa has at NYCFC, nothing like Zlatan has it at the LA Galaxy, nothing like Jovinko has at TFC. It's a lot of players you probably never heard of, to be fair to DC United, unless you're a really big U.S. national teams fan and you've heard of Paul Areola. A lot of them, it's like he's going to have to maybe pick up a lot of these players, but it's going to be hard, because DC United are going to be playing a lot of games in a quick amount of time because they backloaded their schedule. He's going to be playing in crushing heat and humidity, which is Washington in the summer. He's going to be playing for a team that doesn't have a lot around him. It's going to be a lot more like watching Rooney at Everton than it was at Manchester United. So can he succeed? Yeah, I think, of course, he can succeed, but I don't know where this is going to fall. I have my concerns that it's going to not go well for him, but he seems all in. It seems that DC United are going to be trying to invest more. I hope it works, because I don't think it suits the league very well when players like that fail, as much as some people might want them to fail. But this is one where it could go either way. I don't really have a good sense of how it's going to go, because, I mean, DC United have not been a great team for a while, and now they add this player in. How does he fit in tactically? How does Rooney want to play with this team? Can he elevate some of the players around him? That's what we're going to have to see. And there's also other concerns like travel, which is a huge issue in MLS. DC United won't have to do it as much because they'll be playing a lot of home games, but there's the humidity, which is not something you deal with in England. There's going to be a lot of things that Rooney's going to have to adjust, and some players do it better than others.
Interesting. I think on the bright side, DC is very far from Vegas. I think he really enjoys the pool scene there.
Not far from Delaware and New Jersey, where there is now sports gambling.
Okay, yeah, but I think he really likes the pool scene in Vegas. But in any event,
I'm with you. There are some pools in Washington, but, you know.
Okay, we'll see. But it's not like in Vegas.
I don't know if he'll get spotted as much in Washington as he might be in Vegas, let's be fair.
Sounds good. Well, listen, Matt, it was an absolute pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much. It was a great interview. I think we more than made up for last week. So I'm looking forward to more of your articles on the Marca site on MLS. Anyone looking for a great writer, broadcaster, I can't recommend Matt enough. He'd be a great addition to you. So, Matt, thanks so much for joining us. It was a real pleasure.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.